Okay, so we're gonna start from Lamed Amud Aleph. We are gonna start from the two dots. It's the 18th line. Okay, so the Mishnah told us Hanoder min hamazon mutter b'mayim. The Mishnah said that if a person makes a neder to not have mazon, which again we'll have to define what that means in a second, so they are permitted to have water and salt because water and salt are not considered mazon. So the Gemara explains melach u'mayim hu delo ikre mazon. The implication is that only water and salt are the only things that don't qualify as mazon, as things that are satisfying, that fill you up. But anything else is considered mazon. So what's the problem with that, says the Gemara? Lema tehevi tiyufta deravu shmuel. Deravu shmuel damri travayu. Ein mevarchin bo reimine mazonos ela al chameshes haminim bilvan. The Gemara says that this notion that only water and salt are called mazon but nothing else seems to fly in the face of a famous statement made by Rav and Shmuel that appears primarily in the sixth parak of Maseches Brachos, where Rav and Shmuel say that you only recite a mazonos on something which is a derivative of one of the five grains, on from wheat, barley, spelt, oats, or rye. So the Gemara says, how could anyone suggest that everything in the world except for water and salt is called mazon? If that were true, then everything but water and salt, the bracha should be mazonos, which we know is obviously not the case. So the Gemara says, but didn't we already refute Rav and Shmuel? In other words, the Gemara in Brachos in the sixth parak already has certain issues with this position of Rav and Shmuel. So why is it now that the Gemara in Erevin is waking up and asking more questions on their position, where the Gemara in Brachos was already questioning their shita? So the Gemara says, you're right. The Gemara says, Lema tehevi tiyuftayu Nami Meha. The Gemara says, you're right, we can also ask an additional question from our Gemara. Meaning, in other words, you know, oftentimes the Gemara will have multiple issues with a certain shita. So just because the Gemara in Brachos refuted Rav and Shmuel for a particular reason, so our Gemara found an additional reason why there's something problematic with the position of Rav and Shmuel. So what is in fact the answer to this question? So Amar Rav Huna, but Omer Kol Hazan Alai, Mayimu Melachu Delo Zayne, Hakol Mile Zayne. The Gemara says, no, that really the case is as follows. The case where basically only water and salt are excluded, but everything else is quote unquote considered to be food which is satisfying. That's not what we were talking about before of a person who is no dermin hamazon. Being no dermin hamazon is in fact going to include is going to exclude many other things apart from just water and salt. But rather, the way that the person formulated their neder was that they said kol hazan alai, which means anything satisfying should be forbidden to me, which again is a much more limiting type of a neder, because in that particular case we're going to say that it's specifically water and salt that is not satisfying. That's what you're allowed to eat, but anything beyond that is going to be problematic. So the Gemara says, is that really true? V'ha'amar Rabba Bar Bar Chana, ki hava azilna basrei de Rabbi Yochanan lemechal perei de ginosar. One time I was following Rabbi Yochanan to go and eat the fruits of ginosar. Ginosar is an area by the Galil where the fruits were very, very sweet. Ki havinan So the Gemara says that when there were 10 students who went with Rabbi Yochanan, each would take 100 fruits. And when there were 100 students, each of them would take 10 fruits. And the fruits were so large that they would fit into these three baskets. And Rabbi Yochanan one time ate all the fruit. He ate all the hundreds and hundreds of pieces of fruit that we gave to him. V'amar, and he said, Shvuasa delo taim liziyuna. I swear, I take a shvua that I didn't taste anything which is satiating, which is nourishing, which is satisfying. So the Gemara says, don't you see from here, from this story, that even the fruit, it's not water or salt, and yet Rabbi Yochanan said about it that, you know, I wasn't satisfied, I wasn't nourished from it. So the Gemara says, no, ima mizona. What Rabbi Yochanan really meant to say was, is that he wasn't nourished. Of course, fruit is something which is satisfying, but it's not nourishing. Usually, you won't eat a whole meal of just fruit, but it is satisfying, it's just not nourishing. So the Gemara says you can't necessarily draw any conclusions from here in terms of, you know, the way that a person formulates a neder. It's not going to necessarily, permit you to eat fruit, because yes, it's true that fruit is not nourishing. It's not like a whole meal that you would have, but it is satisfying, and therefore it would still be usher to eat if you made a neder in that formulation. Okay. Then the Gemara says, Amar Rav Huna Amar Rav, Shvua Shelo Ochel Kikar Zo Ma'arvin Lo Ba.
kikar zo alai in ma'arvin loba. Now the Gemara starts to get into these kind of very, very nuanced differences of a way that a person formulates a neder. So for example, if a person were to say that I take a shvua that I will not eat this loaf of bread, so all that you've done is that you've restricted yourself from eating the bread, but obviously benefiting from the bread is completely fine. That was never included in your shvua, which would mean that you would be permitted to use that bread as part of your Erev Tchumen. However, if... What was that? Well, okay, good. So hang on 1 second. So, but the Gemara says if you made a much harsher formulation, if you said kikar zo alai, if you look in the Gemara's in Maseches Nedarim and Shuas, if you look at these types of formulations of Nedarim, that is much more serious. When you say a phrase like kikar zo alai, you're not just saying that you can't eat the bread, but you're actually restricting yourself from deriving any benefit from the bread as well. Then you would not be permitted to use that bread for an Erev Tchumen. So the Gemara questions this. The Gemara says, "Meisvei hanoder min hakikar ma'arvin loba, my lav de amar alai." So the Gemara quotes that if a person takes a neder against a loaf of bread, they are permitted to use it as an Erev Tchumen. The Gemara says, presumably, we're talking about a case of a person who uses the formulation of alai, a person who not only forbids himself from eating the bread, but even from benefiting, and yet the Gemara still seems to assume that you are allowed to use it for an Erev Tchumen. How does that make any sense? The Gemara says, "Lo de amar zo." The Gemara says, no, the case really is where all you said was that you're not going to eat the bread, implying that benefiting from the bread is okay, but the Gemara says in a Hanami, it sounds like if you were to in fact formulate your neder in such a way where you're restricting yourself from benefiting from the bread, that would in fact be problematic to use it for an Erev Tchumen. How does the Gemara know this? Hachinami Mistabra De Katani Seifa, Emasai, Bizman Shaomar Shvua Shalo Etamena, Aval Omar Alai Mai, Hachinami De Marvin Loba. The Gemara says that this notion that you can use the bread upon which you took a neder for an Erev Tchumen is assuming that you formulated the neder in the appropriate way. For example, if you said, let's say something like, Shvua Shalo Etamena, I take a Shvua that I won't taste the bread. So all that you've done is that, again, you've forbidden yourself from eating the bread, but that's okay in terms of Erev Tchumen. But if a person said something like kikar zo alai, that you're forbidding not just eating the bread, but you're forbidding yourself from deriving benefit from the bread as well, so then the Gemara says that everyone seems to agree that it would be a problem to use that bread for an Erev Tchumen. So what's the problem with this? The Gemara seems to have a little bit of like a textual problem with this. Ihachi adesani kikar zo hekdesh ein ma'arvin loba, lefi shein ma'arvin behekdeshos, liflog velisne bedida bamed dvar mamurim da amar zo. The Gemara says, if what we just said is correct, namely, that there's a difference between the way that you formulate your nether, whether you say alai or whether you say zo, the Gemara says, but if you look at the next phrase, the next clause in the braisa that the Gemara is quoting, so it seems to pose a problem, because the Gemara says, what if you have a scenario where you say, kikar zo hektish. So in other words, instead of saying I'm forbidding the bread for eating for hana, you make a different kind of a formulation which may have more or less the same connotation. You say this bread should be hektish. Now hektish, we know, you're not allowed to derive benefit or eat hektish unless you redeem it, right? So the Gemara says, so what would the halacha be in that case? The Gemara says that you would not be allowed to use that bread for your Erev Tchumen. Why not? The Gemara says, because lefi she'in ma'arvin behektish. You're not allowed to make an Erev Tchumen out of something which is hektish. So the Gemara is bothered by almost like a very technical question, which is, well, if we just got through saying that there's a distinction between how you formulate your nether, whether you say zo or alai, why doesn't the Gemara make that same distinction in the context of hektish? In other words, why does the Gemara assume that in all cases when a person says kikar zo hektish, that the bread is automatically going to be off limits for Erev Tchumen? It's not true. That should only be true if you formulated the nether as alai. But if you said zo, if you said kikar zo hektish instead of, you know, kikar alai hektish or whatever it is, so then it sounds like that bread should be permissible to use for an Erev Tchumen. Why doesn't the Gemara draw that distinction?
Since you're not allowed to benefit from Hekdesh, how do you allow him to make everyone a Truma?
I didn't hear the end of your question. What was that?
A person can make everyone with Truma food, right?
Yeah. We're gonna get to Truma on the next Talmud. We're gonna talk more about that in the next Talmud. Yeah, we'll see.
How can he benefit from Truma?
We're gonna talk about that. The Gemara is gonna discuss all of those cases on the next Talmud. We're gonna see about Truma. Yeah, Billy, what was your question?
Yaakov just asked my question.
Oh, okay. There you go. Okay. We're gonna talk about all of that.
The overall question is, when you make an Erev Tchumen,
yeah,
you have. I always was under the impression that, okay, you're setting aside two meals, and the reason you're setting aside two meals is for the purpose that you have to have the ability to eat that.
Okay. So we're gonna see a little bit later. The Gemara may question that assumption. We'll see as we go on this stuff. It's a good point, but we'll see. The Gemara's gonna question that. Okay, so that's fine. So let's go on. So the Gemara says, "Amar lecha Rav Huna, elamai kol hicha de Amar alai ma'arvin kasherisha." The problem now is Rav Huna comes back and says, "Well, hang on one second. If you're gonna tell me that any time that you make any sort of a formulation, even if you were to say something like alai, which again, before we assume that alai is like the worst, alai means that you can't get any benefit from it. If you're going to tell me that you're allowed to make an Erev Tchumen even when you say a lie, that's going to fly in the face of how we started this Gemara, because the first half of the Gemara seemed to assume that it was obvious that when you say a lie, that you're not allowed to make an Erev Tchumen with that bread. So the Gemara explains, no. Chasuri mechasra v'hachi katani. The Braisa was missing a line. This is really what the Braisa should have said. Hanoder men hakikar ma'arvin loba va'afilu amar alai nasa ka'omer shvua shalo et amena. The Gemara says, no, that really, if you take a neder to not eat a loaf of bread, you can still use it as an Erev Tchumen, even if you formulated the neder in such a way where you use the phrase a lie. Why? The Gemara says, because we assume that a lie is the halachic equivalent of one who says, Shvua shelo et amena, that I swear that I'm not going to eat the bread. In other words, what the Gemara is basically saying is that a lie is not as severe or not as restrictive as we initially thought. We thought a lie was even forbidding hana. The Gemara says, no, it's not true. A lie is just another way of saying that I'm not going to eat the bread. So the Gemara says, okay, mikol makom kashya l'Rav Huna. Okay, but that also is now going to pose a problem for Rav Huna, because again, we just got through saying that according to Rav Huna, a lie is going to pose a problem. So the Gemara says, which one is it? Make up your mind. So the Gemara says, no, hu da'amar ka Rabbi Eliezer, d'sanya Rabbi Eliezer omer, shvua shelo ochel kikar zo, ma'arvin lo ba, kikar zo alai ein ma'arvin lo ba. So Gemara says that according to Rabbi Eliezer, this distinction is true. So basically, at this stage of the Gemara seems to assume that the question regarding the status of the formulation of a lie seems to be subject to a machlokas. According to Rabbi Eliezer, saying a lie is in fact going to pose a problem. It will make the bread aser bahana'a, which means that you cannot use it for an Erev Tchumen. But it sounds like according to the Chachamim and according to the other Shitos in the Gemara, it sounds like that even a lie should be okay. So the Gemara questions this also. Umi amar Rabbi Eliezer, hachi, is it really true that Rabbi Eliezer drew this distinction between a lie and zo? The Hasanya zeha klal, adam oser atzmo ba'ochel ma'arvin lo. Ochel haneser lo la'adam ein ma'arvin lo ba. Rabbi Eliezer omer kikar zo alai ma'arvin lo ba. Kikar zo hektesh ein ma'arvin lo ba. Lefisha ein ma'arvin lo ba hekteshos. Comes the Gemara with the following machlokas. The Gemara says, again, regarding different types of formulations of nedarim. So the Gemara says, if a person were to say something like, you know, this loaf of bread is usher to me, that's a much lower level type of a formulation, where in that case, you know, we're going to say that it's usher for you to eat the bread, but not to derive any benefit, which means that you can definitely use it for an Erev Tchumen. Whereas, if a person were to say something like, Ochel haneser lo la'adam, it's like putting the bread or the food as the subject of the sentence as opposed to the person, you're saying this bread should be usher to me as opposed to I forbid this bread on myself. Again, these are very technical distinctions in Hilchos Nedarim, but the point is that if you make the bread or the food the subject of the neder, that is going to be a problem according to the Chachamim. Whereas Rabbi Eliezer says that no. Rabbi Eliezer says there is no distinction between a lie and zo. The only distinction lies between neder versus hektish. Again, this goes back to what we were saying earlier in the Gemara, where the Gemara says that you cannot use something which is hektish for an Erev Tchumen. According to Rabbi Eliezer, the only thing which is off limits for an Erev Tchumen is something which is hektish, but in terms of neder, so according to Rabbi Eliezer, no matter how you formulate your neder, whether you say a lie or whether you say zo, it sounds like you're allowed to use the bread for an Erev Tchumen, which seems to be against what we just said a second ago, because the Gemara previously just said that Rabbi Eliezer does in fact distinguish between a lie and zo. So the Gemara says, which one is correct? Which of these formulations of Rabbi Eliezer is the correct one? So says the Gemara, Trei Tanai V'Aliba de Rabbi Eliezer. There was two versions as to what Rabbi Eliezer said. We find this answer in the Gemara all the time, where the Gemara will have machlokas between different students, or different students misheard or misremembered or something, whatever it was. So there were different versions amongst Rabbi Eliezer's students about what, in other words, about what he said, namely whether he distinguished between a lie and zo, or whether the real distinction lies in the difference between a neder versus hektish. So again, that's a machlokas amongst Rabbi Eliezer's students. Okay, now moving on to the next part of the Mishnah, we said ma'arvin l'nazir b'yai. This touches on the question that Yaakov and Billy were asking before in terms of making a neder. I'm sorry, in terms of making an Erev Tchumen with wine for a Nazir or with Truma for a non-Kohen. So the Gemara points out, Masnisin Deloke Veshamai, the Sanya Veshamai Omrim, Ein Ma'arvin LeNazir B'Yayin Uli Yisra B'Truma, the Gemara points out this is in fact a machlokas about whether you can make an Erev Truman with wine for a Nazir or with Truma for a non-Kohen. Beishamai happens to hold that you cannot do that, but we of course follow Beis Hillel who says that you can. So Amru Lohen Beis Hillel Beishamai Iyatem Modim Shema Arvin Legadol Beyom HaKippurim. So Beis Hillel ask on Beishamai, say, don't you agree Beishamai that you can make an Erev Truman for a person over Bar Mitzvah on Yom Kippur despite the fact that they're not allowed to eat anything? So Amru, so Beis Shammai says, yeah, I agree that on Yom Kippur you can make an Erev Truman with food even though you're not allowed to eat. So Amru Lahen, so Beis Hillel says to Beis Shammai, Kishem Shem Ma'arvin L'Gadol B'Yom HaKippurim, Kein Ma'arvin L'Nazir B'Yayin Uli Yisra B'Truma. So what's the difference? If you can make an Erev Truman with food on Yom Kippur that you're not allowed to eat, why can't I make an Erev Truman for a Nazir with wine or for a Yisrael with Truma? So the Gemara says, no, it's not true. The Gemara says, Beis Shammai, Hasam Ika Suda HaRe'uya Miba'od Yom, HaChaleka Suda HaRe'uya Miba'od Yom. The Gemara says, no, there's a very, very basic distinction between these two cases. On Yom Kippur, so the food that you're making as an Erev Truman, you were allowed to eat before Yom Kippur. Whereas if you're a Nazir, or if you're a Yisrael regarding Truma, you're never allowed to drink that wine or eat that Truma. And therefore, the Gemara says you can't compare the case of an Erev Truman for Yom Kippur with an Erev Truman for a Nazir or for a non-Kohen. Okay. Then the Gemara says, come on, who does this Mishnah conform with? The Gemara says, Deloka Chananya. This is against the Shita of Chananya. The Sanya Chananya Omer. Call Atzman Shel Beis Shammai Lo Hayu Modim Be'erov Ad Sheyotzi Mitaso V'Chol Klei Tashmisho L'Sham. The Gemara has a very radical a formulation or understanding of Beis Shammai. According to Hananya's version of Beis Shammai, he has a much more restrictive understanding of how Erev Truman works. According to this explanation of Beis Shammai, Beis Shammai assumes that the only way in which a person can really kind of relocate their Makom Shavisa, their place where Shabbos begins, it's not simply by taking a food item and two meals worth of whatever and putting it down somewhere. That's not good enough. According to Hananya's version of Beis Shammai, you need to literally pick yourself up, take all of your possessions, your bed, your clothing, everything, and move to a new location. So obviously, this whole discussion that we've been having in terms of, you know, can I use a loaf of bread? Can I not use a loaf of bread if I took a neder for wine for a Nazir or Truma for a Yisrael? All of this is against Hananya, because according to Hananya, this whole thing is a moot discussion, because he holds that you know, he holds that in none of these cases is an Erev Truman going to work, not because of a neder or a nazir or a truma issue, but simply because he holds that this is just a general chisaron, an Erev Truman. You need to completely relocate yourself. You can't just plop down some food somewhere and call it a day. Now the Gemara says, Keman azla hadisanya, Erev b'shchorim lo yatza bilavanim, bilavanim lo yatza b'shchorim. Keman, so like whom does the following statement conform? Yeah.
I've got a quick question.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, why can't you use possessions and not use food for an Erev Truman?
Okay, so it's a good question. So the assumption, again, first of all, we don't passing like Beis Shammai, and we probably certainly don't passing like Hananya's version of Beis Shammai either. So at the end of the day, we're going to, you know, this whole perek is assuming not like that shita. So we're assuming that food is the thing, again, with all the details that we mentioned the last few days in terms of the quantities of food, but we're assuming that food is the thing which establishes an Erev Truman. Why it should be food versus anything else, again, we'll see as we go on in the Gemara. The Gemara is going to address... Okay, good. So that, right. So that touches on a little bit on what Billy was asking before. We're gonna get to that point a little bit later in the daf. We're gonna see that in a second. Okay. So again, the Gemara says, who does this statement conform with? The Gemara says, let's say a guy sets an Erev Truman up while wearing black clothing. So the Gemara says he's not allowed to leave the area of the Trum wearing white clothing and vice versa. If he did it with white clothing, he can't leave with black clothing. So who does that follow? Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak Hananya Hiva Alibe de Beis Shammai. That must be Hananya's version of Beis Shammai, because Hananya told us that you basically have to pick your entire life up, essentially, all your possessions, and move and leave. So if you want to walk outside with different clothing than you had when you made the Erev Truman initially when Shabbos began, that's not going to work according to Hananya. So the Gemara says, V'lachananya b'shchorim hu delo yatza ha'bilavanim yatza ha'amar ad sheyotzi mitaso chli tashmishov l'sham. The problem is that the implication of this Gemara is that you're not allowed to walk outside with different colored clothing, right? That's what the Gemara sounded like. But the Gemara says, what's the implication? Let's say I set up my Erev Truman wearing white clothing, right? So then everyone agrees you can't walk out with black clothing, according to Hanani's version of Eish Hamai. But the implication is that I can walk out wearing my original white clothing. But the question is, why should that be so? According to Hanani's version of Eish Hamai, you need to pick everything up, basically take everything with you when you're changing your Eruv Tumin. So the question is, why am I even allowed to walk out with my regular clothing, according to Hanani? I shouldn't be allowed to walk outside with anything. So the Gemara says, you're right. Hachi ka'amar. Irev bilavanim, the hutzrach l'shchorim, af bilavanim lo yatza, keman, amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, Hanani hiva alibi de Beisham. The Gemara adds one caveat here that was different from before, where the Gemara says that when you made the Erev Tchumen, you were wearing white, but you actually wanted to be wearing black, but you, in other words, you didn't have the black clothing on you at the time, or you weren't wearing it at the time. If that's the case, if you wanted to wear different clothing than what you were wearing at the time that you made the Erev Tchumen, then according to Hanani's version of Beishamai, you would not be allowed to walk out even with the original clothing, even with your white clothing on. But if it's just a normal case, if it's just a case where you were wearing white clothing at the time of the Erev Tchumen and you're still wearing white clothing now, then even Hanani agrees that you're allowed to walk out with the white clothing. You just can't switch to the black clothing because you weren't wearing that at the time that you made the Erev Tchumen. Okay. Then the Gemara says, yeah.
Walk to 2000 to the Erev Tchumen.
Yeah.
Shouldn't you then change and put on the black, according to Hanani, you put on the black shirt at that point if you want to walk the next 2000?
Well, I mean, there really is no next 2000. You can't really go beyond. Once you get to the end of the 2000, then you're done. You can't really walk anymore. So yeah, so meaning you would only have to wear the white clothing. And even according to Hanania, if you wanted to switch clothing, you wouldn't even be allowed to wear the white clothing. You wouldn't be allowed to wear anything according to him. You have to stay where you are according to Hanania. Okay, so the Gemara now says, Sumchus Amar Bechulin. Sumchus made this distinction, right, where he said that, you know, a Yisrael is allowed to use a Chulin for the area of Truma, but not Truma, which again seems to be against our Mishnah, because our Mishnah sounded like that a Yisrael, you know, that a non-Kohen is allowed to use Truma for an area of Truma. So the Gemara says, V'ilu l'nazr b'yayim opalig, my taima efshar d'mitchel aniziruse. The Gemara says that Sumchus only disagrees regarding the Truma case. He says that Truma, a Yisrael is not allowed to use Truma for the area of Truma, but he never disagrees regarding a nazir with wine. Implication, obviously, is that Sumchus agrees that a nazir can make an Erev Tchumen with wine. What's the difference? Why should he distinguish between Truma versus nazir? So the Gemara says, no, because it could be that a nazir has the potential to what's called mitchel b'nizirusei. He can petition, he can undo his nazir. So we have this principle by nedarim in general. Let's say a person takes a neder, and then 3 months later, after they made their neder not to drink coffee anymore, so they realize that they can't function anymore, and they go to a Chacham and they petition the neder, and the Chacham says, if you had realized at the time of the neder that you wouldn't be able to function, would you have made the neder? And the guy says no. So that's a form of that's what we call she'ela. That's where you can petition a neder, and nazirus is a subcategory of neder. So in theory, a nazir, if a nazir goes along and says, I thought it would be a lot easier to be a nazir, but now I realize it's too hard, to grow my hair out and not to drink wine or whatever. So he could theoretically undo the nazirus. So the Gemara says, since that's possible, Sumchus allows you to be able to use wine for a nazir, for an Erev Tchumen, since it's very, since nazirus itself is very fluid, since you could undo it very easily. So the Gemara says, but hang on one second. I'm sorry. So the Gemara says, Iachi Truma Nami Efshar Demitchel Ilave. What about Truma? Let's say in theory I have an item that I separated as Truma, and then I realized that I wanted to separate a different food item as Truma. So in theory, you could also petition that. You could also undermine the status of Truma for a food item. So how is that different than wine for a nazir? So the Gemara says, no. Imitchel Allah hadrulativla. The Gemara says, no, because if you undermine the status of Truma on a food item, it's going to revert to being Tevel, and as we'll see in the Mishnah on tomorrow's daf, Tevel is also not a good option for Erev Tchumen. So you're kind of left stuck between a wall and a hard place here. If you undermine the status of the Truma, you're still not going to be able to use it for Erev Tchumen because it's going to be considered Tevel. So the Gemara says, okay, v'lifro shalimi makom achir. Why not just separate the Truma from a different place? What does that mean exactly? So technically speaking, if let's say I'm not in my own field and I have produce which is tevel, which needs to be separate, where truma and meiser needs to be taken from it. So let's say in theory I'm halfway across the world, I'm in a different property that I own. In theory, I'm allowed to separate trumas and meisers from my produce in a different place, and I can have that cover my produce in my other location. So why can't I just do that? So they're like, no, you can't do that. Lo nechshedu chavirim lisrim shalom en amukaf, because lechadchila you're not supposed to do that. There's a din that's called torim shalom en amukaf. Lechadchila you're not really supposed to separate truma from produce unless you're near the truma, unless you're right there by the produce. But in other words, if you're hundreds of miles away, or even if you're in a different field, you're really not supposed to separate that lechatchila. So the Gemara says that people who are makbid on trumos and maestros were not suspect of doing such a thing. The Gemara says, okay, v'lifro shalomi neuvei. Why not just go to your field, take off the truma itself, and then call it a day, and then you can use that produce for erev truma. The Gemara says, no, delays but shira. It must be that the case is where you have less than the requisite shear. Meaning, let's say, for example, the amount of tevel you have would be enough food for three meals, but then by the time you're gonna separate the truma, you're gonna be left with only enough food for one and a half meals, which is not good enough, because we know that you need to have enough food for two meals in order to make an erev truma. So the Gemara wants to know, umay paska, why would the Gemara give such a specific case? Like, why, in other words, the case is where the guy doesn't have enough food left for two meals? It seems like a very, very specific scenario. So the Gemara says, you're right, Ela sumcha savar la kirabanan da amre, called Davar Shehumi Shum Shavus, Gazru Alav Ben Ashmashos. The Gemara says that really Sumchas conforms with the Shita of the Rabbanan. The Rabbanan have a famous Shita, which comes up a little bit later in the Masechta also, that they say that anything which is an Isra Durabbanan on Shabbos, Chazal made a Gezerah that you're not allowed to do it even during Ben Hashmashos. So again, we know that there's an Isra Durabbanan to separate Trumos and Maestros on Shabbos. Why can't you separate Trumos and Maestros on Shabbos? That's a discussion in the Gemara, maybe because it's considered like a kind of Makkah Bepatish or whatever it is. Again, it's a discussion why exactly you can't do that. But suffice it to say, it's an Isra Durabbanan to separate Trumos and Maestros. So according to this Shita of Sumchas and the Rabbanan, that anything which the Rabbanan forbade you from doing on Shabbos is also Usra to do during Ben Hashmashos, that means that you're not going to, in other words, that means that by definition, you're not going to have a valid Erev Tchumen in this case, because Erev Tchumen begins at Ben Hashmashos. It begins, you know, as Shabbos is about to start. And since there is no possibility of separating Trumas and Maestros according to this position, because you're not allowed to do Durabanans during Ben Hashmashos according to Sumchas, that means that by definition, your Erev Tchumen is not going to be valid. And that's why you can't use it. It's not because you have less than the shear. It's not because you have, you know, less than two meals worth. It's just because you're not allowed to do Durabanans in this scenario. Okay. The Gemara now says, "Kiman oz lahadisnan yish sha'amru hakol lefi mashehu adam melo kumtso mincha umelo chafnav ketores v'hashosem melo lugma biyom hakipurim uvemazon shteis tudos le'irov kiman amar abzera sumchasi da amar my dechazi le'bayina." And the Gemara says, "Like whom does this following statement from the Mishnah Maseches Kelim conform?" The Mishnah Maseches Kelim describes various areas of halacha that are somewhat subjective, that depend on the individual. So, for example, let's say it comes to the din of Mitzah. We know that when a Kohen offers a carbon mincha, he needs to scoop out the flour with his fingers. Again, there's a whole discussion about exactly how he does that, but basically he has to scoop the flour out. So this Mishnah in Kelim assumes that you're always going to have a different quantity of flour depending on the size of the Kohen's hands. Or let's say, for example, you have to scoop out a handful of ketores. So that's also going to vary depending on the size of the Kohen's hands. Or let's say, for example, the Isser of eating and drinking on Yom Kippur. So when it comes to drinking on Yom Kippur, the shear is a malo lugum of a cheekful. Everyone has different size cheeks. Or when it comes, for our purposes, when it comes to the din of Erev Tchumen, you have to have enough food for two meals. This touches on something that we were speaking about yesterday, right, where, in other words, is that number of two meals, is that subjective? Does that depend if a person eats more or less? Or maybe it's just an objective average number? So it sounds like from this Mishnah in Kelim that all of these halachos are subjective. They depend on the individual. So the Gemara says, who does this Mishnah in Kelim follow? This must conform with the Shita of Sumchas, because Sumchas, as we just pointed out before, says, "My dechaze le ba'inan," that in these cases, you need to have something which is fit for each person, which is ra'i for each individual. So according to Sumchas, if you want to make an Erev Tchumen with two meals worth of food, it has to be food that you would eat at two meals and not that the average person would eat at two meals. So the Gemara points out, Lema pliga ad Rav Shomen Elazar. Desani Rav Shomen Elazar Omer, Ma'arvin l'chola u'lezakin k'dei mezona u'leravasan besuda beinan eshel kol adam. This seems to go against the Gemara that we spoke about yesterday. Remember, the Gemara yesterday talked about the Shita of Rav Shomen Elazar. Rav Shomen Elazar was describing a case of making an Erev Tchumen for a Zakin or a Chola. So a Zakin or a Chola, they can't eat two meals. They can only eat, let's say, one meal, let's say, as an example. So they can get away with having less food for their Erev Tchumen. And conversely, if you're a Rav son, if you're a glutton, you eat a lot. So the Gemara says that for a glutton, he can get away with having the normal average two meals, even though for him, that wouldn't really fill him up. So the Gemara says, how could Sumchas suggest that everything is subjective? According to Rav Shomen Elazar, it's not true. So it seems to be a machlokas now between Sumchas and Shomen Elazar. So the Gemara says, no, it's not true. The Gemara says, Targuma achol of izakein, avo ravson, but ladaita wait till kol adam. The Gemara says, that line, that sheet of Shomen Elazar, was only referring specifically to a person who's ill or a person who's older, where they can't eat as much, and therefore for them, we're going to be mekel and assume that the standards for their Erev Tchumen will be less than for a regular person. But when it comes to the Glayim, when it comes to the guy who eats more than a regular person, so there the Gemara says we invoke the expression but ledaito etzel kol adam, because since he's not the norm, he's abnormal, therefore the assumption is that we follow, in other words, we follow the standards. So if the norm is that average people will eat, well, you know, in other words, only need enough food for two meals a day, so therefore the Gemara says that's the standard we're going to follow. Even if this person eats four or five meals a day, it doesn't matter. He still only needs to have enough food for two meals in order to create an Eruv Tchumen. Okay. Then we said,
I make an Eruv for myself, can my family go along with that, even though I've only made it myself for my two meals?
Well, yeah.
Or do I need to make it if I got two kids and a wife? I got to make it for...
It's a good question. It's a good question. The assumption is it sounds like from the Gemara, you know, it's not like the Eruvs that we make today. It sounds like every person needs to make their own Eruv Tchumen because the idea of an Eruv Tchumen is that it depends on where you are when Shabbos begins, right? So in other words, if every person is going to be in their own location when Shabbos starts, they need to create their own Eruv Tchumen if they want to walk. Now, in theory, you can make an Eruv Tchumen and have other people in mind. Maybe that might theoretically work. You know, if you make it some kind of a Kenyan, perhaps that might be possible. But you know, but there needs to be some kind of an understanding beforehand that they're all going to be joined in with the Eruv Tchumen. Okay, so then we said...
To make the food appropriate for...
So that's a good question. So meaning if you have multiple people in the family, do you have to make multiple meals worth of food? That I'm not sure about. I don't know. I would assume so. I would assume if you have multiple people, then it sounds like you would need multiple meals, I think. Okay, so then the Gemara... Yeah.
So if you make the Eruv with wine, yeah, let's say it's legitimate.
Okay. Yeah.
So how does that qualify as a meal?
So this gets into the whole discussion we had yesterday. Yesterday we went through all the different quantities, you know, of peaches and wine and beer and beets and onions. So, you know, a lot of those things are not things that you would think of as meal items per se. But in theory, if you have enough of it, right? Remember the example we gave yesterday with beer, right? The Gemara said you could drink a cup of beer in the morning and at night and you'll be full. So in theory, you could have enough of those items to be full, theoretically. Okay, so then we said in the Mishnah... Yeah.
I don't think you have to eat the elephant.
Okay, so we're gonna get to that in a second. We're gonna discuss that soon. So fine. So then we said v'la kohen beveis hapras. The next example the Mishnah gave of a valid Erev Tchumen is a kohen and a beis hapras. What exactly is a beis hapras? A beis hapras is an area where you think there might be a dead body, but you're not sure. Let's say, I don't know, let's say this place used to be a cemetery hundreds or thousands of years ago, and everyone lost track of the bodies. You know, you think there might be a body here, but you're not really sure. So that's only tamei midrabanan. There's no tumah d'oraisa. Because you don't know definitively if there's a dead body there. So in a beis hapras, the Gemara says that if a kohen makes an Erev Tchumen in a beis hapras, that's also okay. What's the basis for that? Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, menapeach adam beis hapras v'holech. The Gemara says that in theory, a kohen could even walk through a beis hapras. How could he do that? The Gemara has this very strange suggestion. He can blow on the ground of the beis hapras. What exactly does that do? So blowing on the ground, the assumption is that if there's like a bone or a piece of a dead body covered, it's going to become uncovered as you're blowing on the ground. So any dead body that's even there, the Kohen will see it right away. So the fact that he was blowing on the ground and doesn't see anything, that's an indication that there's no tumah there. And then the Gemara says, Rabbi Yehuda bar Ami Mishmei de Rabbi Yehuda Amar Beis HaPras Shenidash Tar. And then the Gemara adds further that if I had a Beis HaPras that was plowed over, let's say some guy came and turned this ancient cemetery into a strip mall, and he started, you know, they took a tractor and plowed over the whole area, so then everyone agrees that it's going to be tar, because even if there was a dead body there, it's probably the pieces of the body were probably crushed up to less than the shear, because the shear of a piece of a dead body to be metame is what's called an etzem kisaora. It has to be the size of a barley corn. So the assumption is that if a tractor went over the whole field and started plowing everything over, even if there was a body here, it's probably been crushed up anyway. Okay, then we said, Rabbi Huda Omer Af Beis HaKfaris. Rabbi Huda has an even bigger chiddush. He says, not only can a Kohen make an Erev Tchumen in this Beis HaPras, in this area, which is only Tamei Midrabanan, he can make an Erev Tchumen in a real cemetery, which is an Isser D'Oraisa normally for a Kohen to enter. So the Gemara says, how does that work? Tana, Mimnei Sheyachol, Lachotz, V'Leilich, Beshida, Teva, Umigdal, Kasavar, Ohel, Zaruk, Shmei, Ohel. The Gemara says, because there is a theoretical scenario in which a Kohen can enter a cemetery, a very, very strange scenario, but basically, if a Kohen were to go inside of some very, very heavy chest, or a box, or a closet, or something like that, because those are items that are not generally meant to be carried. Items that the Gemara calls what are called that are asuyin lenachas. They're meant to be, you know, to rest. They're not meant to really move. Very, very heavy chests or closets or whatever it is. So if you were to carry a Kohen through a cemetery, one of these these very, very heavy chests or whatever, that chest would act as a chatzitza and it would prevent the tumah from spreading into the box. And the Gemara says this sheet in the Gemara clearly assumes ohel zaruk shmei ohel, that a portable ohel or that an ohel that you're carrying has the status of an ohel, meaning this box that the kohen is in is acting as a valid chatzitz, as a valid interposition between the kohen and the cemetery. And the Gemara points out, "Ubeplukta dahani tanoi d'sanya hanichlas liaret zaham and b'shida teva umigdal Rabbi Metame Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yudah Metahar." This is subject to a machlokas. The Gemara discusses what's called tumas eretz zaham. The Gemara in a few places discusses this. Tumas eretz zaham was a tumah midrabbanan that Chazal imposed on chutz laaretz. There was again for a variety of reasons. So Chazal said, if a person leaves Eretz Yisrael and goes to chutz laaretz, they're going to have tumah midrabbanan. And the question was, what if a person enters Chutz Laaretz inside of one of these boxes? So the Gemara says that was a machloka. So according to Rebbe, they're still going to be Tamei, but according to Rabbi Yosi and Rabbi Huda, they're going to remain Tahar. So the Gemara says, but Maiko Miflige, what's the machlokas about? Mar Stavar Ohel Zaruk Lav Shmei Ohel, Umar Stavar Ohel Zaruk Shmei Ohel. Presumably, the machlokas is regarding the status of an Ohel Zaruk, regarding the status of one of these chests or closets or boxes that are moving around. Is that really considered like a valid Ohel or not? So the Gemara says, hang on one second. Hadisanya Rabbi Huda Omer. Ma'arvin l'kohen tohar b'truma tohora b'kever heichi azil b'shida tevo migdal v'hakevan da'achta itamula. The Gemara says, hang on one second. We discussed the case of a kohen taking tahar truma, right? Again, this is a tahar kohen taking tahar truma, putting the tahar truma on a grave in a cemetery, and the Gemara says that's a valid area of truman. So the question is, well, hang on a second, how exactly is the kohen going to get through the cemetery? You're going to put him in a box, you're going to put him in one of these chests. The problem is that the second that he gets on top of the kever, he's going to become tame. So the Gemara says, no, b'shalo hukshiro, oshin yiloshim b'mei peros. The Gemara says, no, that really the truma itself, in other words, the Gemara's assumption is that the minute you put your tahor truma down on top of the grave, so then it's going to become tumin, and then the whole game is over, and then the whole era of truman is not going to work. So the Gemara says, no, it's not necessarily true. There could be circumstances where just because you put truma on the grave, it doesn't necessarily make it tumin. What's the case? So either the truma wasn't machshir lekabel tumah. We know we've spoken a lot about this in previous masechtas, that in order for an item to become susceptible to tumah, it must come into contact with one of the seven liquids, right? Wine, water, dew, honey, milk, oil, right? So if let's say that didn't happen, or let's say the truma was made with fruit juice. So fruit juice is also not mekabel tumah. So you could theoretically construct a case where you have truma on a grave that's not mekabel tumah. So fine. So then the Gemara says, v'heichi ma'isila, b'fshutei kliyetz delo mekabel tumah. So then the Gemara says further, you'll take your truma and you'll carry in what's called pshutei kliyetz. Pshutei kliyetz means I have a wooden utensil, but it does not have a receptacle. It's flat. There's a special gzeres akasov that the Gemara learns out that we have what's called pshutei kliyetz, a flat wooden kli without a receptacle on the bottom. It's not mekabel tumah. So if I take my truma and I bring it to a cemetery inside of a pshutei kliyetz, it's not going to be mekabel tumah. The Gemara says, what do you mean? Why not? But the Gemara says, okay, so maybe intrinsically the pshutei kliyetz are not mekabel tumah, but the second that you bring that wooden utensil on top of the grave, it's effectively acting as an ohel. The din is, we actually saw this back in the Masechet Shabbos, that if a person takes something over their shoulder, let's say, and it's at least a tefach and it hangs over a grave, then that item becomes tumah. So even though yes, pshutei kliyetz intrinsically is not mekabel tumah, but the second that you walk the truma into the cemetery, it should act as an ohel, and the truma should become tameh. The Gemara says, no, demaisei le'achore. The Gemara says, where you move the truma to the edge of the kliyetz, and you turn the kliyetz on its side, so this way the kliyetz is less than a tefach. If it's less than a tefach, then it can't be mekabel tumah, and it can't act as an ohel anyway. So the Gemara says, okay, but ihachi ma'itayma derabanan. If that's the case, if the case is where the kliyetz is less than a tefach because you turned it on its side, then why would the rabbanan say that it's a problem? Why would the Rabbanan, not allow the Kohen to put the Truma, on the grave? The Gemara says, no, because Kasavre, Asur Liknos Bayis B'Yisure Hana. This is kind of out of left field, because the Rabbanan assume that it's forbidden for a person to buy a house using something which is Asur Bahana. What does this have to do with our Gemara at all? So we're talking about a Kohen acquiring a Makom Shavisa. Again, remember, the whole point of an Erev Tumen is that it's extending your place where you began Shabbos, your quote-unquote, your house when Shabbos began. It's extending how far you're allowed to walk. So the Rabbanan assume that that's the equivalent of buying a house, and you're not allowed to buy a house with something which is Asur Bahana, and a dead body is Asur Bahana. So the Rabbanan say that's why you're not allowed to have an Erev Tumen in the cemetery. So the Gemara says, okay, but Michlau, the Rabbi Huda Savar Mutter. The problem is that Rabbi Huda would obviously seem to disagree with that. How could anyone disagree with this halacha? So the Gemara says, no, because Kasavar Mitzvah Slavli Hanos Netnu, because Rabbi Huda, in other words, Rabbi Huda agrees with the general principle that you're not allowed to buy a house with Yisurei Hana. It's just that he happens to hold that this is a case of an Eruv Tchumen, and an Eruv Tchumen is a mitzvah. Now, that's also a big discussion. We have this back in Masechta Shabbos, and we'll have it later in the Masechta also, regarding whether you're allowed to make an Eruv Tchumen in any case you want, or is it only mutter to make an Eruv Tchumen b'makom mitzvah? We'll see that in the Gemara in a second also. So according to Rabbi Yehuda happens to hold that you're only allowed to make an Eruv Tchumen if there's some kind of a big tzorach, some kind of a big mitzvah that's happening on Shabbos. Let's say a big Rav is coming to town who's giving a shir that you want to go listen to. So for the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, you can make an Eruv Tchumen. So the Gemara says, because we have a principle in halacha called mitzvos lav lehanus nenu, mitzvos were not given over for hana. And again, what that means is a whole separate discussion in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, but basically mitzvos were not given over for hana, so therefore there is no issue in this case. In other words, Rabbi Yehuda fundamentally agrees that otherwise it would be problematic to purchase a house or a makum shavisa with something asur b'hana, but it happens to be that mitzvos are not subject to the isur hana at all, so therefore it's going to be mutter. So then the Gemara says, Elohad amarava mitzvos lav lehanus nenu, lema kisana yamar lishmaite. So now that the Gemara has established that we invoke this principle called mitzvos lav lehanus nenu, mitzvos are not given over for hana, why doesn't the Gemara attribute this to the machlokas that we, you know, in other words, the old machlokas tanaim regarding whether you're allowed to make the Eruv Tchumen in this case? So Amar lecha Rava, no, isvir lehudein ma'arvin el ledvar mitzvah dechulei alma mitzvos lav lehanus nenu. Everyone, in other words, if you're going to take the approach that you can only make an Eruv Tchumen for a mitzvah, like we just said, many shittos in the Gemara hold, then everyone's going to have to agree that mitzvos lav lehanus nenu, the mitzvos are not given for hana, and that's why you're allowed to make the Eruv Tchumen in the kliyets in the cemetery. V'hacha b'hacha miflagei mar savar ein ma'arvin ela lidvar mitzvah umar savar ma'arvin afilu lidvar harishas. The machlokas is, what's the nature of Eruv Tchumen? Not everyone agreed to this principle that Eruv Tchumen could only be in cases of a mitzvah. Others say, no, even if you wanted to just stop, go for a stroll, that would also be a good enough reason to make an Eruv Tchumen. Then the Gemara says, ela hada amar Rav Yosef ein ma'arvin ela lidvar mitzvah lema ketanay amar lishmaite. So now that the Gemara is invoking this idea that Eruv Tchumen is limited only to cases of mitzvah, why doesn't the Gemara attribute this to the same machlokas tanaim that we just quoted? Again, because not everyone agrees to this. There's a machlokas regarding the nature of Eruv Tchumen, so why doesn't the Gemara mention that this is a machlokas? So Amar Lecha Rav Yosef, no. Dechulei alma im arvin el lidvar mitzvah. Everyone agrees that you can only make an Eruv Tchumen for a mitzvah. Dechulei alma mitzvah slav lehanusnu. Everyone also agrees that mitzvahs are not subject to hana. Uvahakam miflage mar savar kevin dekanale Eruv lo nechale de mintara. Umar savar nechale de mintara di yitzrich achel. This last point in the Gemara touches on the question that many of you were asking up until now, which is, do you really need to eat the Eruv Tchumen? Like, what's the real purpose of the Eruv Tchumen? So the Gemara says it seems to be a machloka. So one sheet in the Gemara holds, once you've established, once you've created your Eruv Tchumen, that's it. In other words, even if the food is not accessible, even if you can't eat the food anymore, it doesn't matter. You made your Eruv Tchumen, your job is done. But the other sheet says, no, that maybe the Eruv Tchumen has more of a practical purpose also, which is, let's say a guy runs out of food and needs to eat something. So there, in that case, you want to actually be able to use the food from the Eruv Tchumen. That's the machlokas. That's the issue in this whole Gemara about whether you're allowed to, you know, make your Eruv Tchumen in the cemetery. If you hold that the whole point of the Eruv Tchumen is just to allow you to walk, so then, okay, the Kohen doesn't have to walk into the cemetery. He can walk outside of the cemetery, and that's fine. But if you hold that there's a practical function that you need to be able to eat it in theory also, the Kohen can't walk into the cemetery to get the Truma, and therefore that is going to pose a problem.